The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
The Biden administration says North Korea is testing a new intercontinental ballistic missile system that's based on data from two recent launches that American intelligence agencies are assessing. And those two launches, the White House sees as a serious escalation, according to senior administration officials. These officials say North Korea appears to still be testing the system because the most recent launches did not show the range or capability of prior launches. But these officials say they could in the near future. The Treasury Department is expected to slap new sanctions on Pyongyang tomorrow in response. President Biden is willing to meet Kim Jong-un with no preconditions if staff-level talks reach an agreement, according to these officials, though there was no word on when that could happen.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Another reason to pray for peace. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. Something to keep your eyes on. North Korea now testing missiles, perhaps hypersonic missiles. And again, the White House, that correspondent confirming that. Unfortunately, that's it's not news we need today, right, from a rogue nation like North Korea. Last week and the week before, Kim Jong-un, he closed off, we've talked about North Korea in the past many times. I don't want to go too deeply into it. I just want to keep this on your radar. He is a dictatorship. He has ballistic missiles. He tested them. Two of them in a test. He was testing a new launching system. Now, these weren't full launches. You know, apparently, the U.S. said that full tests will probably come later. They're going to try to disguise it as a space launch. That's what a lot of countries do. But the Biden administration came out. They condemned the launches. But as you heard in that package there, and I think this is important, they're still open to negotiations without preconditions. So let's start talking, all right? Let's hope that our leaders approach this properly, and let's pray. Let's pray for peace. I mean, more weapons does not make the world a safer place, at least not in my opinion. It doesn't. In another news outside of international affairs for just a moment, I've been following that story of Jussie Smollett. Do you remember that? He was the man who is the star of the TV series Empire, and he claimed in 2019 that he was attacked by two men in the middle of one of the coldest nights of the year, and they put this noose around his neck, and they called him homophobic, and they were uttering these racial slurs. They beat him up, and of course, when police came to his apartment, he still had the noose around his neck. I mean, horrible. And the world was outraged, of course, rightly so. The country was, I should say. He was arrested a month later on the charges that he made it all up. He was lying to police. There was an investigation, spent a lot of time, a lot of law enforcement, a lot of money, and it was, bottom line, it was all a hoax. No, it was a hoax. Story didn't hold up to scrutiny, especially after the two alleged assailants told the police, Jussie, he paid us $3,500 to do it. So Smollett now owes the city $120,000 in restitution for all the money spent, investigating them. That's, of course, Chicago, and a $25,000 fine. He's been sentenced to 150 days in jail for perpetrating this hoax. It was a hoax hate crime, all right? Hate crimes are horrible enough, but to perpetrate a hoax for what? For popularity, for attention? He was upset he didn't get more attention as a result of this. And I saw a piece the other day where I think Jesse Jackson, I think it was Samuel Jackson, Black Lives Matter, the NCAA, they all wrote letters on his behalf to the judge. And one commentator said, you know what? I don't think it's going to have much of an impact, all those letters. What they're going to look at is what he actually said on the stand. And he wasn't very forthright or forthcoming. He wasn't very honest, let's put it that way. So a little bit of justice being doled out there, but just thought I'd put that on your radar. It was a story that made a lot of headlines several months ago, finally came to a conclusion. There is some good news, too. Let's talk good news for just a second. This comes out of the state of Texas, out of their Supreme Court. They ruled that Texas officials cannot enforce that 6-week abortion ban under the law passed by the legislature. They don't have the authority to do it. That means that it stands as is and will be protecting the lives of both, the children and the mother. So, look, we're in a weird time, aren't we? I mean, the stories that come across our radar that you have to deal with on a constant basis, they deal with life, they deal with gender ideology, they deal with racism, they deal with wars and threats of war. These are troubled times. And I go back to that fundamental. And I'm going to be, today's Friday. I hope you're fasting today. And if you're not fasting, I hope you are sacrificing in some capacity. Unite that to that of the Lord. In about an hour, we'll pray the chapel. But I think we just have to intensify our prayers for our country. We have to intensify our prayers for our leadership, for the enemies of this country, for the world. You know, I think there's something about it. My personal opinion, I think Satan knows that his head will be crushed. Right? We know that Our Lady's Immaculate Heart will triumph. And I sometimes think that he's becoming more aggressive than ever because I think he knows his time is running short. That's my personal take on this. I really do. He's becoming much more aggressive. How do we disengage him? Well, today is Friday. I would encourage you to make sacrifice, to do penance, as we've talked about yesterday. In fact, I had a great conversation in my last hour yesterday with the communication director from the World Apostle of Fatima. We looked at not just the Fatima story, but the importance of what the angels who appeared there said about doing penance. This is so important for the conversion of souls and for warding off war. You know, and I think we need to do more of that. Pray, sacrifice. If you can today, fast, do penance. I'm telling you what, it will change things. And we need to do that, especially for what's happening in Ukraine right now and with, of course, Russia. Your president addressed the country. Kamala Harris was overseas. She made a statement today about war crimes. Coming up in a few minutes, Congressman Chris Smith will be stopping by, and we'll talk to him about holding those accountable for these war crimes, holding them accountable. But the New York Times reported this morning that Russian forces battered by just a determined Ukrainian resistance. These guys are unbelievable. These are citizens. It's like you and me. Putting on a uniform and grabbing a gun. They stepped up their aerial bombardment across Ukraine earlier today, and they targeted locations far from the front lines. And they continue to pummel cities, the Russians did, which are already devastated. Here's a current peek at the scene now unfolding in Eastern Europe. Check this out.
A day after the airstrike that ripped through the maternity hospital in Mariupol. No mercy in the response from Russia's foreign minister. It's not the first time we've heard pathetic shrieks about so-called atrocities committed by Russia's armed forces, he said. Sergei Lavrov insisted the hospital was a legitimate target, being used as a base by radical militants. He was in Turkey meeting with Ukrainian counterpart Dmytro Kuleba for the highest-level talks since the invasion began. But any hope of a breakthrough lay buried beneath the rubble. City council officials say a child is among the dead at the hospital, adding to more than 70 children killed and countless more injured across Ukraine.
As I said, Congressman Chris Smith is going to stop by a little bit later in the program, in about 15 minutes or so, and we'll talk about holding those who are bombing maternity wards, those who are committing war crimes, accountable. How do you do that? Could Vladimir Putin be held responsible? The Russian forces, they're regrouping. Vladimir's doubled down. They're going to press the Ukrainian defense on multiple points. And the Ukrainian military says, it was holding back offenses in all directions. And, one day after the Ukrainians repelled Russian tank advances, I don't know if you saw that video, took out several of them with drones. It was pretty impressive. They're facing fierce clashes right now in the suburbs of their capital. And Russia's push is intensifying. It's coming now as the war is taking especially a grim turn. Hundreds of thousands of people now are living just in dire conditions. No electricity, no sanitation, frigid temperatures, no food. And yet they're continuing to try to defend their country in places like hospitals. And with all of this, we hear our own administration here trying to pin the economic sanctions here at home on none other than Vladimir Putin. I know you are experiencing the rise in gas prices, food prices. Inflation is at almost 8%. It was 7.9%, and it's continuing to climb. I don't know about how you feel about this. I am a little frustrated, to be honest with you. When I heard the president say, they're coming out with this hashtag, a Putin price hike. This is those prices you're getting at the gas pipe, that's Putin's price hike. Yeah, I agree. Yes, some of it was due to the turmoil in the past 2 weeks, but not all of it. We've been paying higher prices ever since this administration came into power. So when he was asked about the state of inflation, the Biden administration, they deflected. Listen to this.
Biden officials are confronting even more inflation, with prices rising 7.9% since last year, the third month in a row with inflation at a 40-year high. The president reasons a large contributor to inflation this month was an increase in gas and energy prices as markets reacted to Putin's aggressive actions. But Stephen Ratner, former Obama economic advisor, tweets, well, no, these are February numbers and only include small Russia effect. This is Biden's inflation, and he needs to own it.
The president's statement blames the Putin price hike. Are you guys just going to start blaming Putin for everything until the midterms?
Well, we've seen the price of gas go up at least 75 cents since President Putin lined up troops on the border of Ukraine.
That was Jen Psaki, the White House press person, defending the position. I personally am insulted by it. I'm no fan of Vladimir Putin, trust me. And I do think that this war has created it's going to create a lot of economic hardship around the world and even here at home. But it's almost insulting. Hashtag Putin price hike. You know, it's like, do they think the American people are stupid? Do they think you're dumb? Do they think, oh, you know, if we say this enough, they're going to believe that's the reason that they're paying so much. It's all about Putin. I mean, personally, I'm more intelligent than that. I know you are too. To me, it's just incredibly, incredibly insulting. Of course, energy prices were already going up well before Russian soldiers started lining up along Ukraine's border. But Jen Psaki, you know, she told reporters, she says, look, there's no question that inflation may be higher for the next few months than it would have been without Russia, without President Putin's, you know, Russia, without Russia's further invasion of Ukraine. We've seen the price of gas go up 75 cents, she just said. You heard her there, right? They had said that inflation and these price hikes, that was all going to be transitory. You remember that? It's transitory. It's transitory. Apparently, it's not. And I just want to say to you, and I trust in God's providence. We talked about this. I know I had a friend call me. I haven't heard from him in a long time today. She called me and says, what do you think's happening? I'm very concerned. And she had a lot of fear not a lot of fear. She was deeply concerned. Let's put it that way, right? How big can this go? Can it launch into a global conflict? Could we see nuclear weapons? What does it mean for the economy? And I had to say to her, look, you have to be at peace. You got to put your trust in God. God's providence always prevails. Things may get tough. It's an opportunity for us to sacrifice. It might be an opportunity for us to carry our cross. We can make it meritorious. We can use it as a mechanism to pray for the conversion of those who are perpetrating these types of things. So, you know, and she says, thank you for saying that. I really needed to hear, you know, that message of hope. And I'm hopeful we're going to get through this. Things look grim and grave right now. No question about it. Not just over in Ukraine, but even here on the home front. I think in my own personal prediction, I told you what was going to happen with COVID back in November, December, how bad it was going to get in January. I think things are going to get a little bit worse before they get better. I really do. Just one final point on this, and I'll change gears. I said to her, you got to remember, if you look at Champion, Wisconsin, when the Blessed Mother came, she gave a message about what would take place. She called for prayer and conversion. World failed to do that. We saw the worst forest fire in U.S. history devour as much land as the state of Rhode Island in those famed and only approved apparitions in this country. La Salette, we saw the same thing. We saw the same warning. We saw that in Fatima. Today, you know, we have an opportunity to pray, to fast, and to really ask God for his mercy. And I believe if we do it in earnest, we'll see the fruit of it. We will. I think so often we hear these messages and we think someone else is going to do it to return a deaf ear. So that's my invitation and my call to you. But let's talk finances for a minute, all right? I want to speak with Paul Auster, who's going to be stopping by in a moment. I came across something that will affect a lot of Americans, and that is your credit cards, all right? Credit card debt. I don't know how much credit card debt you have. I do want to address this issue a little bit because the inflation that you just heard about, you already know about because maybe you're paying more, nearly 8% more, 7.9% inflation, is going to have an impact also on what you pay in your credit card. So please, credit cards to me are the bane of my existence. You've got to govern them, and you've got to be judicious on how you use them because the interest in your credit card is usually a variable rate, and it's tied to the Federal Reserve's interest rate levels. Next week, The Fed is going to be meeting, and they're more than likely going to raise interest rates. And the rumors are it's going to be a quarter point rather than a full 1% raise that's been talked about earlier. But that quarter point is going to mean higher interest rates for a lot of people. So if you're carrying credit card debt, and it's more than likely you are, I had seen a stat that there's $357 billion, $357 billion in credit card debt, with the average holder owning about, $6,000 of that. That came from NerdWallet. You can do your own search and see what their numbers are. But that's something you're gonna want to check out. So if the average is six, there's a number of people carrying a lot more. I'm joined right now by Paul Auster. He is the CEO of Better Qualified. He's been with us many times in the past, specializes in business and consumer credit services, and an expert on how major credit bureaus operate. Check him out at betterqualified.com, and feel free to join us if you'd like at 888-914-9149. Paul, good to talk with you today. Good afternoon.
Oh, good to talk to you, Drew, and thanks for having me back on.
I'm delighted. I saw, the inflation numbers. I know that the Fed's going to probably raise the rate again. That's going to impact a lot of people who've been dependent on their credit cards. A quarter of a point doesn't sound like a whole lot to me, but let's talk about that. What kind of impact will that have on credit card debt, somebody holding that average of $6,000 or more?
Listen, you're talking about, unfortunately, the lower FICO score people, their average interest rate on credit cards will be over 25% for sure.
Whoa.
That's crazy. That changes the average minimum payments, by a significant amount, enough that it's going to cause people to start to default on their credit cards. And look, we've been on this slippery slope before and credit cards are, it's a great indicator as to what's going on in the overall economy. So people start defaulting on credit card payments, then they start missing car payments, then they start missing mortgage payments. And next thing I don't care what tag you give it, recession, depression, whatever it may be, we're going to see a significant impact, when the Fed starts to raise the rates. And this is just the first of a series. We've all enjoyed this ridiculous, historically low interest rate environment, and no one could sustain it. 0% is, it's a joke, right. But we've all gotten used to it, right? We've all gotten used to it, and we've become spoiled. Yeah, everybody likes it. The reality is, at some point, we have to pay the piper, and we're starting to see that with inflation, and it's really like the perfect storm as to what's happening. So when you throw the pandemic on top of everything, and now, a recovery is great out of the pandemic, but the recovery is going to drive the inflation numbers. It's going to boost, quote unquote, the economy, but it may be too much too fast. And then the inflationary pressures are going to have a devastating impact on the average consumer for sure.
Here's the thing, though. This is just the first of a number of price hikes, from what I understand. It's the first move by the Fed. They're likely going to be there's going to be more. They're going to try to rein inflation. And I had listened to some financial program the other day, and they're concerned that we could actually see a recession in the country. So your sense, how close are we to a recession? Our inflation continues to go up, raising a quarter percent this time. I understand why they're keeping it so low. There'll probably be multiple raises. Your sense on where we are and how that's going to help, and as these rate increases in continue to go up, how does that affect people carrying that debt?
Yeah, listen, I try and stay as positive. I try and stay on that side of the coin as much as possible. And the reality is, when you're talking macroeconomics, it's just all of us together, right? So the average consumer needs to be concerned for themselves. The Fed's not going to help you. Your bank's not going to help you. You got to help yourself. And we have to have some accountability here. So you and I have had these conversations for over the past couple of years. And getting out of credit card debt has to be, or it should have been, the number one priority for every consumer. And I understand we were in tough times, but all you have to do is put a household budget on paper or on your screen, right? Use one of the apps that are out there. Put a household budget together and figure it out from there. This is not guesswork. This is not something that you can kind of, at the end of the month, hope that you have extra money to pay down the credit card debt. Figure out how you're going to get there. And the only way to do that is to figure out your expenses, right? I've said this 1,000 times. We're basically all on fixed expense, fixed income, right? We have a salary, even if you're 1099, look at your past couple of years, figure out your average monthly income, and then work from that number. And you have to be able to cut your expenses so that you have money to pay down your debt. And when you look at, we've become, you know, we are now in this subscription era, right? We are, we've talked about all things internet. Now it's all things subscription. Everybody wants you for $5 a month, $14.99 a month, $10.99 a month, Spotify, Netflix, Hulu, Sirius Radio. A family of four people, three, four, five people, you know, you're easily $100, $200 a month in subscriptions. Do you really need them?
Right.
So I'm not saying you have to do it forever, but I'm saying it's like being on a diet, right? It's like going to the gym. Take a 3, 6, 12 month approach, and you got to be disciplined. So if it means cutting out those subscriptions so you have extra money to pay down the debt, you know, it's an awesome thing. It's just like how you got in. People always say, Paul, I can't believe how fast it happened, right? I got into this problem.
Right.
Now I'm $30,000 in credit card debt. The good news is you can get out of it just as fast. You just have to be disciplined to do it. And once you start paying down the principal balance on those credit cards, and it, you know, there's a ripple effect in the opposite direction. The more you pay down, the more money every single month is going towards a principal balance. And you will be amazed, if you really focus on a plan, how quickly you can get out of that credit card debt.
Yeah, yeah. I want to thank you for being with me, Paul. Always good to have you here. If people want some counsel, some direction, they want to read about this or get, you know, some strategies to find that financial freedom, what's the best way to do that? How do they connect with you?
Just go to the website. I mean, that's simply the easiest way. It's betterqualified.com, betterqualified.com. You could always call us at 888-533-8138, but nobody likes to talk to anybody, and I get that. So just go to the website. I'll give you, you know, it's not my apps or anything like that, but we've put together a couple of good packages to help people get out of debt, and I'll give it to you. You know, if you need help fixing your credit, because the problem with credit card debt is it leads to lower credit scores, which leads to higher interest rates on everything else. So your credit score is either going to cost or save you money every single month. And once that credit card debt starts to creep up, the scores are going to come down, and it's really good. You're going to feel it in your pocketbook, for sure.
You got it. Well, Paul, thank you. We'll talk again. I think there's going to be some choppy economic waters in the days ahead, so we'll turn to your counsel. Always good having you here. Enjoy your weekend, okay?
Okay. Thanks, Drew.
Thanks. That's Paul Auster. Check him out at Better Qualified. When I return, Congressman Chris Smith will be stopping by. There's been some tremendous atrocities in Ukraine, including the bombing of maternity wards and disabled centers and shooting of civilians. Who will be held accountable? Stay with me.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
We all watched the television coverage of just yesterday. That's on top of everything else that we know and don't know yet. Based on what we've just been able to see, and because we've seen it or not doesn't mean it hasn't happened. But just limited to what we have seen. Pregnant women going for health care, being injured by, I don't know, a missile, a bomb? In an unprovoked, unjustified war? Where a powerful country is trying to take over another country, violate its sovereignty, its territorial integrity, for the sake of what? Nothing that is justified or provoked? Absolutely there should be an investigation. And we should all be watching. And I have no question the eyes of the world are on this war and what Russia has done in terms of this aggression and these atrocities. I have no doubt.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, I don't often have a lot to agree with Kamala Harris on, the vice president there, but this I do. And she's absolutely right. I watched her press conference this morning. I saw her the other day, and journalists, of course, asking very important questions. What about war crimes? I mean, we are seeing horrific footage of maternity wards being bombed and a lot of other atrocities, civilians being picked off, artillery just bombing, you know, shopping malls and houses. It's quite crazy. The British government right now, they have confirmed the use of so-called vacuum bombs. These bombs are horrible devices. When they explode, they set off an explosion that sucks all the air out from around them, and they send off a fiery blast as well. That makes a much bigger blast. They have often used these to get people in caves or in buildings and things along those lines. These are horrific weapons. And I think the use of these things should be banned, period. There are civilians who are trying to flee. They're being shot by snipers. The fact that Vladimir Putin and Russian forces continue to target civilian places like apartment buildings, to me, that's a war crime. Targeting civilians. He's been accused of hitting a home for the disabled. There were 330 residents in it. I read about that this morning. The mayor of that city where this home was said, he said 48 schools have been shelled. So right now, from the reports that are coming in, there's something like 17 hospitals across the country, including that maternity ward that the world saw, have been blasted. 17 hospitals, really? And of course, Russia's saying, oh, these were, you know, combatant forces that were in them. The United Nations said that there are more than 400 civilians that have been killed so far, but they acknowledge that number is going to be a lot higher as they can't retrieve a lot of these bodies. These kinds of actions are obviously war crimes. When the Nuremberg trial took place after the Second World War, people vowed, and you probably remember this, never again is what was said. Yet today, in our own day, as shocking as it is, it's happening again, and the world is pretty much sitting back and they're watching because Putin threatens, you know, to retaliate in a way that has never been seen before. There is one man on Capitol Hill, a man who I have a lot of respect for. His name is Congressman Chris Smith. He represents New Jersey's 4th Congressional District, and he's been very vocal in his support of human rights across the globe. And we've spoken to him many times about that and his defense of the unborn. He introduced a bill this week, and it's going to urge the creation of, appropriate regional and global justice mechanisms to immediately investigate and prosecute Putin and those responsible with the Russian Federation as war criminals. And he joins me today, and I'm very grateful for his time and for his service to our country. Congressman, thank you for joining me. Good afternoon. Hey, Congressman Smith. Maggie, is the congressman with me? I'm not hearing anything here. All right, I'll tell you what. There you go. I can hear you now, Congressman. Good afternoon.
Oh, good afternoon to you. And thank you for having me on. It's
my pleasure. It really is. I'm grateful for what you do. Let's talk about your bill. I know that you chaired the first hearing in the House of Representatives to hold Russia accountable for what are barbaric practices. And I know you're going to press for the prosecution of Vladimir Putin. I want to talk about how probable that is. But let's set this up. I mean, your bill wants a mechanism for justice for war criminals, so that's fantastic. I always thought there was an international criminal court. Is that what that's for, or what are you hoping to achieve, and what's coming to you?
It's a great question. Yeah. Drew, there's a number of mechanisms already in place. The ICC, International Criminal Court, they're already investigating, but their track record has been awful over the last 20 years, and that's been part of the problem. Maybe this is a chance to prove themselves. I had at my hearing David Crane. And David Crane was our prosecutor in the Sierra Leone and Liberian investigations that actually put Charles Taylor, the president of Liberia, behind bars for 50 years because of his atrocities. David made some very good recommendations. One of them is that the General Assembly can okay a tribunal because the, you know, in the Security Council, we got, sadly, China and Russia with veto power. You only need one. And the ICC may or may not really do it, or they'll do it so slow that it's after, long after the war is over, and God willing, that is as quickly as possible. But my thought is, because I've worked on all three of the tribunals, including the former Yugoslavia, which was holding Slobodan Milosevic to account, the dictator in Serbia, is that we need it right now. There's enough information to bring an indictment, to name him, Vladimir Putin, as a war criminal, and, you know, and then aggressively build that case even further for additional charges. I mean, it's like, hey, some people said, well, wait, we need more evidence. Did we need evidence when Hitler went into Poland with the Blitzkrieg?
Right.
I don't think so. But you could build the case even further after, you know, more information is garnered and gathered. So, and I do think some people around him, including his military, will say a war criminal, you know, like the Nazi War Crime Tribunal.
Mm-hmm.
How do we want to be a part of that? And it might potentially have a chilling effect on, you know, some of this aggressive behavior by his generals and other politicians in Russia.
I hope so. I think it'll be great. I know a lot of other nations are looking at what's happening in Ukraine right now as being war crimes. Yeah. I mean, we're seeing these vacuum bombs. We're seeing civilians being deliberately targeted. We're seeing, you know, maternity exactly. wards being blown up. Of course, the Russians are saying, ah, these are combatants, or, you know, they're making excuses for their actions. Anthony Blinken, he had come out, and when asked about whether these are war crimes, I saw him a couple days ago kind of dance around, not really answer the question. Today, the vice president, she pretty much said that these were war crimes. So what's happening in terms of the administration? Where are they on this, and will they support this type of action?
Well, it's not clear because no one knows if Vice President Harris really speaks for the administration. You know, sometimes off-the-cuff remarks, even ones that are scripted, may not. I mean, there's been some division there.
Right.
And, you know, there's been – I asked the Wendy Sherman, number two at the State Department, a question. I still don't have the answer for it. When Zelensky asked for significant military equipment, including surface-to-air missiles, as the Russians were building up their capability, that is to say, on their borders, what didn't he get? What did he get, and what didn't he get? Did not get. And I still have crickets. They said they would be getting back this week. You know, we had an opportunity, especially when Putin's designs were becoming more apparent, to deter war, and that's the best use of a military ever. You have enough firepower that the opponent, the aggressor, decides, I'm not going to do this. You know, I don't want a Pyrrhic victory and lose my army on the way in.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we missed an opportunity hugely with that. And that said, you know, just do this comparison, Drew. We left $82 billion, different estimates, but that's order of magnitude, to the Taliban. And so far, we've only given $1 billion. And we don't even know how many of that billion to Ukraine is actually more armaments. You know, some of it is humanitarian needs, and you know, we're doing more, but lateness to the game means that more people have died, and I find that appalling.
Well, I appreciate all that you do to defend life. Let me go to the phones for you. Nathaniel's listening in Lewis, Colorado, and he actually has a question for you, Congressman. Nathaniel, hi, you're on the air with Congressman Chris Smith.
Hi, Congressman. Yeah, I guess my question is, why do we think an international court's going to do any good against Putin when nobody's doing anything about China when they're committing genocide against the Uyghurs?
That's a great question.
Oh, it's a great question. You know, I've been very, very active, held numerous hearings. I'm barred from traveling to China because I want to go to Xinjiang, you know, which is closed off now, but I've tried because genocide, as you know so well, is being committed against the Uyghurs, the Muslims, and others. You know, what they do to the Christians and the Falun Gong and to Tibetan Buddhists. I mean, Xi Jinping ought to be held for crimes against humanity as well. Instead, he hosts the Olympics. Mm-hmm. And I had hearings that I held telling the IOC and us, the U.S., to work to change that venue, going back to 3 years ago when we started that effort. And everyone just yawns and says, well, we'll do you know, a slap in the wrist with a diplomatic boycott, which didn't mean a thing to Xi Jinping. So your question is absolutely right. But in this case, you know, war crimes are being committed every day with full exposure being, you know, the whole world's watching it in real time. And it seems to me that if we can't bring an indictment immediately against Vladimir Putin and others, but start with him, designate him, brand him for what he is, it might have some deterrent effect on this, how hard he wages this war. It won't make it worse because I think there will be dissension in the ranks as that proceeds. Milosevic in Serbia, when he invaded Bosnia, as well as, and I met with Milosevic in Belgrade, he was a monster as well, and he was tried. He died during the trial. He never thought anyone would ever come close to him with this, but that took years. We don't have years, and the Ukrainians don't have years either. But it's a great question. We have been so enabling of the Chinese Communist Party on multiple fronts, including the pandemic, and I just find it appalling. But they're slaughtering people right now, usually behind closed doors, unlike Putin, which is out in the streets.
My guest today is Congressman Chris Smith. We'll take a few more calls in a minute. I want to just get to the Putin issue here because he's really the man behind it. I feel bad for the Russian people in some respects. I don't think they would ever have wanted him to roll into Ukraine and take it over. He had his narrative. This was part of his agenda. It's far easier to pin a war crime on a soldier who commits it than a leader who orders the invasion or orders the shoot. How realistic is it? And what he has done is criminal. I'm totally with you on this. How realistic is it that he would ever be held accountable?
If we go through the modality of the ICC, the International Criminal Court, there is a possibility. But most of the indictments, and there have been very few that they've brought over the last 20 years, were Africa-centric. You know, very little has been done elsewhere. And the slowness, the tardiness. Yeah, you want to build a good case. And they do often go after people that are not at the top, although Bashir in Sudan is an indicted war criminal, crimes against humanity for what he did in Darfur by the ICC. But he has not been brought to justice. That's why I think multiple fronts need to be looked at. One of them would be a kind of like a regional court, the way it was done in Yugoslavia, Rwanda, and Sierra Leone. I mean, the number of convictions were very large, very high number. But I do think for the crime of aggression, you know, the ICC doesn't, you know, its mandate does not lend itself to that. But the General Assembly of the UN could convene tomorrow and bring that charge and a tribunal against Putin and his government. And so there's a number of venues. The problem is, delay is denial. You know, we don't want this being done a year from now when all we talk about is what the death toll was. You're indict him now. And there's enough there to do so. If we don't think there's enough, by his own words, he has certainly indicted himself. He's the one who ordered, you know, the invasion. like I said, the analogy between Hitler and Poland and the Blitzkrieg.
Exactly.
What, do you think it was done by somebody else? Of course it wasn't. And I think then the process, you build the case even more. You go after his generals. One of the things they do not have usually in these criminal courts is plea bargaining. Now, plea bargaining is important because then you get somebody to turn on the bigger fish in this case. So I'm not holding my breath that we'll get that authority. But we've got to hold the worst of the worst to account.
I'll tell you, I don't have much time you have, Congressman. I know you have a busy day. If you want to stay, I'd love to talk. Let me take a short break. When we come back, we'll grab another call or two. And to your point, you say the time to act for justice and accountability is now. Justice delayed is justice denied. My guest today, Congressman Chris Smith, trying to hold those accountable, these heinous actions that we're seeing in Ukraine, accountable. We'll talk more. We'll take a few of your phone calls. I only have the congressman for a few moments. So if you want to get in, 888-914-9149. I'll be right back.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com. Forrester.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy begins soon on Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon and welcome back. It is a delight to be with you. We will pray that chaplet coming up in about 10 minutes. Let's continue to pray for peace. Let's pray for our Ukrainian brothers and sisters who are going through some unbelievable hardship right now. And we'll pray for each other. If you are just tuning in, I am joined this afternoon by Congressman Chris Smith, a real champion for those who have been oppressed. As he's talked about, he's banned from China, defending the Uyghurs. He represents New Jersey's 4th Congressional District and has served the country for quite a long time. He introduced a bill this week that would urge the creation of a regional or global justice mechanism and would investigate these types of war crimes and hold people like Vladimir Putin or the Russian Federation, those who were involved in these crimes, accountable. Congressman, it is good to have you back here once again. I do want to take a couple calls for you here. And, of course, there's a lot to talk about. I want to get into this. Before I take calls, I want to throw one more thing at you. Refugees. You know, I had a couple days ago spoken to somebody who is in the bordering country to Ukraine, and they were driving back and forth to aid so many of the refugees in Poland. There's something like 2 million plus. The numbers are continuing to rise. Some estimates are they can go as high as 4 to 7.5 million refugees, and this is one of the largest human exoduses in modern history. What are you hearing there on Capitol Hill? I mean, I know we've allocated millions of money to help. How are we helping? And you give me your insight on what you know regarding the refugee crisis we're now facing.
Well, the belief on Capitol Hill, and I do think it's bipartisan, which is great, is that we have to have, our doors need to be open for people fleeing war. These are true refugees. And Poland, Drew, I mean, talk about a generous policy. President Duda, and I know him, he's a wonderful man, a very pro-life member of president. And I remember when he was with the he was a member of the European Parliament. He was great there. He's been great ever since. The Polish people, in the fine tradition of caring for the refugee, you don't see 10 cities the way you do some places. They're taking them into their own homes. Such a great act of compassion and love and Christ-like charity. So they deserve just tremendous praise and gratitude from the world. In Poland in particular. I met with the Polish ambassador 2 days ago. We had a great conversation. And I mean, they're there for the Ukrainians. They also want to help the Ukrainians, with aircraft as well, which has gotten the red light from the Biden administration, which I think is a serious mistake.
Yeah, I do, too. I mean, you look at the devastation Stingers and Javelins are doing. What's the difference with the jet? And I don't, the other thing is I don't think Vladimir Putin wants a conflict with NATO or the U.S. No. He's got enough on his hands right now. Let me just
change
gears.
Right. Good.
No, go ahead. Your thoughts. Yep. I'm curious as to how you see that.
No, I think you're right. You know, if Putin's going to say that, our military hardware is what's effectively stopping his tanks and bringing down some of his aircraft, including helicopters, well, it is coming from us and from NATO. So to give Zelensky, which he's asked for, a greater capacity and capability, that's how you make the peace more likely. Again, we missed an opportunity as the buildup occurred on the border to give Zelensky the deterrence that he was looking for. Nobody attacks someone because they're too strong, only when there's a perceived weakness. And Afghanistan is part of this equation, as you know. When we left there and left Americans behind, Putin and Xi Jinping and everybody else, and they say it in their media. They tell the people in Taiwan, they being the Chinese Communist Party, don't think the Americans will have your back. Look what they did in Afghanistan. I read these things in real time.
I can imagine.
It's terrible.
I'm going to go to the phones in a second. One other thing is just to change gears slightly from Ukraine to bring it home for a second. I was on the air yesterday talking about a bill in Maryland that, even though it doesn't explicitly say this in the bill, it seems that it would allow for doctors to kill an already born child up to about 28 days after birth. And it's Senate Bill 669. It's called the Pregnant Persons Freedom Act of 2022. And I always choke over those sanitized, titles that they give to these bills because they're really, they're quite nefarious and quite dark. It has a provision in it that prohibits investigations and criminal prosecutions for women or medical personnel for failure to act in relationship to some sort of perinatal death. And it goes on. There's a whole lot of other things in that as well. But the thought that you could allow a child, you can terminate a child up to 28 days, to me is just inconceivable. What do you know about that and what's being done when it comes to this battle for life?
Sure. Well, that bill, like some other bills in states where there's a pro-abortion majority in the legislature, is just another example of the inhumaneness of the other side. They have absolutely no concern for an unborn child, and in this case, a newborn child. You know, this bill promotes infanticide, the killing of a newborn up to, as you said, maybe as many as 28 days. It also, you know, I wrote our major law on combating human trafficking. It's called the Trafficking Victims Protection Act. I authored it. And the predators who abuse women through trafficking often go to abortion clinics to keep their commodity, the woman they've reduced to a commodity, back on the street rather than pregnant and having a baby. This protects those who coerce women to abort. Are you kidding me? This is an outrage. You know, it just, again, shows when it comes to human rights and just basic fundamental respect for life, the abortion movement is absolutely morally bankrupt. So you're right. This is another example of extreme. You know, in Maryland, you can already get an abortion at 24 weeks. And if there's a mental assertion, it's up to birth. And you're right about the labeling of bills, too. The bill called the Women's Health Act, which passed the House with every single Democrat except for Cuellar, Henry Cuellar from Texas, voting no. All the others voted yes. That would be abortion right up until birth. Yeah. And they call it the Women's Health Act. We call it the Abortion on Demand Until Birth Act.
They always have
some sanitized, you know, phraseology
like reproductive justice, the Equality Act, all these things, they just nauseate me because that's not really what they are. Joe in Philadelphia, we only have about a minute or two for you. You're on the air with Congressman Smith.
Okay.
Joe, go right ahead.
Good afternoon, Drew. Good afternoon, Chris. Thank you very much for taking the call. I would just like to segue from what you just commented on, the horrid bill pending in the Maryland legislature, as proof positive of where we stand at the political level so much in America. And it just seems inconsistent with Putin doing all the killing on his side of the equation while we're equally doing the same amount of killing, perhaps at an even higher rate with abortion. Would it make sense, if we're going to indict Putin, to take the strong, well-known voices in this country, in America, in Canada, and say to Putin, okay, these are the archbishops, these are the Jewish leaders, these are the people that say at the political level, we must stop abortion as proof positive that God exists and this Ukrainian war is out of control. It needs to be stopped, but we as a people of God across this planet must stand up.
Amen.
It must
to that.
Use our strength and must use our resistance.
Joe, I have less than a minute.
So
let me let Congressman Smith respond to you. Go ahead, Congressman. You have about 60
seconds.
Well,
Joe, yeah, as you know, 63.4 million unborn babies have been killed in the United States since Roe versus Wade. And that number equates with every man, woman, and child living in the nation of Italy. It is a numbing loss of children's lives. It harms women. And, you know, we, as Christians, as believers, as Catholics, we're against all violence, whether it be Putin violence or abortion violence against children. And we're consistent. We're the consistent ones who believe you need to preserve and protect life at every stage of development.
Well, Congressman, I'm about to pray the chaplet, and I will pray for you and your family and for the great work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Thanks for
so
being
much.
With me today. It's always great to talk with you. That's Congressman Chris Smith. I'll be right back.